Welcome to the podcast series Talking Success, connecting the global fintech community. I'm Catherine Brussel, and today I'm joined by Wayne Hennessy Barrett, who is the founder and CEO of 4G Capital. 4G Capital are a neobank for Africa, powering micro and small business growth to build economies and generational success. They provide clients the right financial service, the right training, and the right digital solutions for growth for good. Hi, Wayne. Thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast. How has your week been?
Well, thank you, Catherine. It's a great pleasure to be here. I'm having a fantastic week. It's only Wednesday, but it's awesome.
Brilliant. And we're very excited to hear a bit more about, obviously, 4G Capital. But more specifically, it would be awesome to hear a bit about your interesting career journey. If you could sort of take us through that and really how you were able to kind of match some transferable skills into just a really exciting opportunity in the fintech space, which obviously is 4G Capital.
Well, it's really humbling to be asked, and it's very kind of you to have me along. It's a very atypical journey, I guess, but I don't know what a typical journey looks like. So I began really, I was born fairly internationally, I guess. So I was born in Iran, lived in the United States till a young age, then schooled in the UK, university in the UK. And I found myself, quite drawn to, causes of justice and injustice and what was fair and what was not fair. I was quite an idealistic young man. And so I joined the British Army after studying a degree in politics and international relations, because it was very clear that a lot of the structures of the way the world was working was, they still hadn't quite come to an equilibrium. The Cold War had ended. The Cold War, for younger viewers, was the period of the standoff, or listeners, I should say, the standoff between the US and the Western alliance and the Soviet Union and the communist satellites. Mm. And we grew up under the shadow of the bomb. And so the opening up of what is now Russia, was a miraculous development. Mm. But we also saw countries in Yugoslavia and elsewhere start to deconstruct and the most awful civil wars appear. And so it became clear that there still needed to be, interventions to try to stop some of these tragedies from happening and stop some of these injustices. So I was drawn toward all that. I found the military a very rewarding career, gave me everything I wanted. It went on for longer than I planned. It was 17 years in the end. And so, yeah, I found myself sort of, in Bosnia, Kosovo, Macedonia, and then I was an instructor at Sandhurst, which is the British Officer Academy, which is an enormous, privilege. And then sort of Ministry of Defense jobs and sort of policy making, and seeing how government worked and how power networks and formal power structures worked in the public sector. And then, of course, there was 9/11. And so I served in Iraq and then latterly in Afghanistan as a company commander, and then ended up as second in command of my regiment, the Coldstream Guards, which was a great privilege to be part of as well, because you're really dealing with some of the most extraordinary people in the world. Incredibly courageous, incredibly gifted, incredibly committed. But I have to be honest, at the kind of the end of the military journey, it was becoming apparent that what we're doing in the Middle East particularly, it wasn't really solving the problems that people were facing. Mm. That communities needed access to opportunity, they needed investment, they needed education and knowledge, that a lot of the really dark behaviors, the really, really dark behaviors that I witnessed and in some cases was part of, trying to be a solution to end that. They come born of desperation and poverty and anger and hatred and ignorance. And so if you can counter those things with opportunity and knowledge and hope and love and creativity, that actually is much more of a long-term solution than bombing people and shooting things. Yeah. And so there will always be a role for the armed forces when all other options are expended. But but it was time for me to move on. And so I'd been very, very fortunate in learning about people, in learning and seeing people at very close quarters under high, high levels of pressure, and seeing them at their best and sometimes at their worst, and then seeing how organizations function, you know, very small teams, a four-man, six-man team, you know, in a patrol base, you know, in a small village in Bosnia, you know, I was in charge of through to, you know, running, you know, or helping run a battalion of, you know, 600 people, or actually overseeing overseas operations with tens of thousands of people deployed as part of a really sophisticated, high quality headquarters with all the most modern technology and all the most sort of instant capabilities to hand. So it was an extraordinary sort of journey to be able to see and be part of all these things. And then to think, okay, it's time for something new. I don't know what I want to do, but I want it to matter. I want to continue to make a difference. I want to be able to provide for my family, and I want to do something I can be proud of. Mm. And so I left the army, and I spent a short period of time as a consultant in a very little boutique company in Jersey, in the Channel Islands, where I live now with my family. And from Jersey, I was headhunted by a South African finance firm who said, we want you to set up a lending operation in Kenya. And I thought, well, I've never actually been to Africa ever, and I'd never worked in finance, so clearly it was a strong yes. I mean, why would you not? It's how hard can it be?
Exactly.
So, you know, you've got to kind of have the get up and go to kind of get up and go, I guess, and to put yourself into areas of excitement and to kind of, I suppose, reach for the opportunities as they arise, but also manage those risks. So I was incredibly lucky. I was able to begin a business from grassroots and set up in Kenya. Began in January 2013, and absolutely fell in love with Africa, fell in love with Kenya, fell in love with, you know, financial inclusion, which is, you know, the new discipline I found myself coming into, really from ground zero. And you know, build an operation that, you know, within 9 months was, you know, cash flow positive. 18 months later, I led a management buyout. 24 months later, raised some external capital, and we've been growing really, you know, at almost 100% year-on-year growth.
Wow!
Ever since then, and it's just been an absolute roller coaster, a really wild ride, but huge fun. And I know it's a word I use again and again, but it is an absolute privilege to be this lucky to have a life which has unfolded and given me the opportunity to do something, not just one thing, but a number of things which I've really loved and really been able to kind of apply myself to. And I guess, you know, maybe see some small result as a result.
No, that's awesome. And I mean, you know, you've spoken about all the success that 4G Capital's had, particularly with achieving, you know, for example, sort of consistently high collection rates. What would you say has been attributed to a lot of that success you've seen?
Well, I guess I'm, you know, maybe underselling the luck thing as well. Luck. One of my favorite expressions is by a Roman writer, Seneca. Luck is when preparation meets opportunity.
Yes.
You know, I guess my time, you know, working in the armed forces had given me a number of transferable skills, which I was able to apply from, you know, the outset to quite high, you know, theoretically quite high risk situations. So I'd not been to Africa, but I had been to, you know, all the other places I'd mentioned. And I knew that, you know, you could get the best out of people generally by treating them with respect, by being humble, by having a clear plan, by communicating clearly, but also, you know, not putting yourself into a position of vulnerability, letting people know that you meant business when you mean business, and that you reward good behavior,
yeah,
and that you'll protect yourself against bad behavior. So that's not a bad baseline to start with. And then knowing how to design and to build an operation. And so to come up with a plan, start with a timeline, like we're taught, be clear about your objectives, selection and maintenance of the aim. Don't be dictatorial, be collegiate, you know, make sure that your team are bought into what you're doing. Really find and retain the best caliber people you can, and let them fly and be free, but also keep that, you know, closeness of accountability, you to them and them to you. So all those sort of transferable things, I think, and together with I guess my own sort of restlessness at how we can do better as a species, we can do better as a human race.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have to be poor. We don't have to trash the planet. We don't have to fight. You know, we're better than this.
Yeah.
But it's not going to happen on its own. If you sort of sit around waiting for governments to solve the problem for you, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to get up yourself, you know, with creativity and with passion and with determination, but also with a really clear win-win mindset. So that kind of, I guess I always loved and related to my customers from the beginning, from the absolute beginning.
Yeah.
You know, our customers are the self-employed, largely female, informal market traders of sub-Saharan Africa. They're the ladies and the men that you see lining the roads whenever you drive anywhere in Africa, selling fruit and veg. Tiny little market stalls selling clothes, selling general goods. You know, they'll fix your phone. They'll be running a cyber cafe. They'll have a small bakery. There'll be seamstresses who are building or making school uniforms. And they are incredibly resilient. They are incredibly positive. They are tough as old boots. And they are always smiling, and they're always striving for a better life for their children and for themselves. And they have pride and dignity and resilience. And I absolutely love them. And they are underserved and underrepresented and all too often not very well treated by their surrounding environments, because they aren't beset with lots of wealth and they don't have a huge sort of collective voice. And so if they can be given the wherewithal to succeed, you know, working capital and enterprise knowledge to grow their businesses and to put their kids through school so that they can be doctors, lawyers, professionals, entrepreneurs, innovators, then suddenly you're creating a kind of magic where, you know, I'm aligned with them because I want the same things for my kids. And suddenly we're doing something together. You know, and that I guess that kind of sense of mission and purpose was always in the DNA of the company. But you know, it's not just about me doing this; it's about a team that believe in this. You know, my wife is my co-founder in the business as well. She's the chief of staff. I'm the CEO. She joined the company after I'd set it up, having been a very successful entrepreneur in her own right, and the head of medical training for the United Nations in Africa. So whilst I was sort of beavering away on spreadsheets, she was off to Mogadishu in South Sudan delivering first aid training with a bunch of ex-Special Forces medics. And I thought, this is a bit of a role reversal. Hang on a minute. I'm meant to be I'm the badass one going off into the field, and you're the one who's sort of, you know, looking after hearth and home. And it was very much a role reversal. Mm-hmm. So I was sort of doing the school run whilst, you know, she was dodging suicide bombs and things like that.
Wow.
But, you know, as we used to say, if you can't take a joke, you shouldn't have joined. And all these experiences give you a much, much richer outlook on life and stuff you can bring to the party. To answer your question, you know, what's behind the success of 4G Capital? Discipline, systems, processes, but an absolute laser focus on the mission.
And I know you spoke a bit about you know, you're uplifting these small entrepreneurs and you guys are very much embedded in the community in Kenya. You know, how are 4G Capital providing financial literacy and supporting you know, these ladies and these entrepreneurs? If you could talk us through a bit of that.
Yes, Kenya and Uganda.
And Uganda.
yeah. So Uganda is super important as well. We've got great plans for Uganda, particularly next year. So we're very fortunate. We're, you know, we are a fintech. We are, you know, the neobank for Africa. So we are building and evolving digital banking services, digital lending services to propel small business growth. So the business training is delivered through a combination of channels. We have, in addition to the tech channel that I mentioned, we do like people. We do use a hybrid model. So we've got relationship officers who are in the field. And I think we're in about 105 locations now across Kenya and Uganda. I lose track of it week to week because we're growing again. Mm. You know, we're just, you know, dropping teams everywhere. But it is fantastic. But so those relationship managers, relationship officers, not only provide kind of a private banking experience to these entrepreneurial clients, where we understand their business, they have somebody to speak to, we can work together through good times and through bad times, and we've got really good line of sight of what's going on. But they also act as business mentors. And so they can deliver small, short, digestible lessons face to face using the tablets and the content that we create. But more scalably, we can also give our clients access to training content, via our YouTube channel or through tweets or through social media. And so we're always building and evolving the library of lessons, making it more specific to their needs, tailoring it not just for the people who struggle, but also the super high performers. So that's a really exciting, and really important part of what the company does.
And tell me a bit more about 4G Capital's expansion plans. I know you obviously mentioned Uganda. How are you kind of scaling things up, and what does that look like in the next sort of, I would say, couple of years? And also, how does that sort of tie in also with your sustainability mandate?
Yeah, 100%. So we're on the march. We're growing. We've been profitable for a while, which is a great position to be in. That is kind of the key word of sustainability. Is the business model self-sustaining, or do you continuously need capital to just keep going? And we're very fortunate. We got the unit economics right very early on, and so we're able to grow organically, and now we're looking to really accelerate that growth through technology. So we're looking at growing in Kenya, growing in Uganda, because these wonderful markets are growing in population terms at a very high rate, and that means lots of people who need to be entrepreneurs to serve their communities, to feed their communities. And so that's an obvious opportunity zone. But we are looking at developing more products to serve our existing clients and, of course, to meet the needs of more clients. So that kind of growth in multiple directions. And then, of course, we're looking at other countries in Africa where there's a need, which is most of them, actually. But we have to be disciplined and look at where will there be the fastest sort of product market fit. So we're looking at West and North Africa in the coming sort of 18, 24 months. That's exciting. But when you look at what we do and how we do it, and the validation that we've managed to achieve in what can be quite challenging environments, I'm really clear in my mind that this is not just an African company. This is an emerging markets company. We have a solution that can power entrepreneurial growth from the grassroots really worldwide. And as the fintech revolution continues to evolve, we will have more methods of incorporating novel payment means and legacy existing banking or payment rails. And really, I think playing an important role in driving this entrepreneurial growth in a much, much bigger way. And the excitement, just grows as the size of the challenge becomes apparent. I think the global finance gap for micro and small medium enterprises, it's something insane. It's something like about $5 trillion from the last World Bank report. Wow. I saw. I might be off by a trillion or two, but it is an extraordinary amount of funding that is needed to meet the needs for small business growth, because there are all these fantastic men and women around the world who've got the wherewithal to buy and sell and generate incomes, but their businesses are starved of working capital. And it's no good beating up the banks, because the banks have a duty to look after the savings of their customers. Yeah. So they're not really meant to be doing high risk capital lending, if they're also looking after the savings of people. So there's a real role for people like 4G Capital to work with banks in countries where we can take some of the surpluses on their balance sheet We can deploy it into really effective, well-tailored micro SME loan facilities that are stewarded using a combination of really high caliber people and amazing artificial intelligence, algorithmic credit scoring, and continue to deliver the kind of, you know, 95% collection rates, which we historically have achieved, you know, which is a much lower NPL rate than a conventional retail bank, because we've got this laser focus of doing one thing really, really well.
Mm.
So I think there's an extraordinary landscape of opportunity here to address. But the way to do it, you know, like everything, is incrementally, in a disciplined way, building block by building block, not trying to do it all at once. You know, learn the lessons from people who've maybe grown a little bit too quickly before they've got their profitability under control. You know, don't cut corners with compliance. Don't cut corners with regulation. You know, we see the regulators as absolute allies. They're like the referee in a boxing match. You know, they're there to keep the whole, you know, to keep everything in the square. And without that, there's a free for all. So we're very supportive of regulatory frameworks and of central banks, because, you know, they're trying to grow the whole economy. They're not just trying to look after one corner of it. So that's really important as well.
Yeah. I mean, that's amazing. And I mean, we do wish you all the success with, you know, especially sort of bridge that financial gap. And like you say, there's just so much opportunity, you know, not just on the African continent, but, you know, there's plenty of, like you mentioned, how many trillion, you know, to help these entrepreneurs and especially at the grassroots level that you are kind of working from.
Yeah, I mean, completely.
Yeah, so we're very excited to kind of watch 4G Capital and see you guys grow over the next, probably the next 6 to 12 months at the very least. And thank you so much today, Wayne, for joining us. Tell me, if anyone wants to reach out to you directly and get hold of you, what is the best way for them to catch you?
Oh, gee. I mean, LinkedIn's always there, isn't it? Mm. Our website's got a contact email address also. We service those sort of inquiries, you know, pretty rapidly. But yeah, you know, I mean, you know, we are looking for partners to scale with. We provide, you know, this last mile distribution finance. We help, you know, big companies like Procter Gamble and Diageo and its subsidiaries move from cash on delivery to retail credit. So, you know, any distributor in Kenya or Uganda, please reach out. We are here to help you boost your sales. And similarly, you know, West Africa, you know, Ghana, Nigeria, Egypt, you know, these are the places we're looking to go and how we can help value chains grow by bringing our tech and our credit services to retail activities. So yeah, our website's probably the best place to go, but LinkedIn also.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for your time, Wayne, and best of luck. And we will definitely speak soon.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you, Catherine.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode, Talking Success, Connecting the Global FinTech Community. Please follow us on LinkedIn under Talent in the Cloud, or if you're interested in exec talent, expanding your FinTech team, or you yourself are looking for an exciting change in your career, please check out our website, talentinthecloud.io.